Chapter 16, The Car Wash Fundraiser. By September, the Build a Bridge fundraising campaign had surpassed $18,500 in donations. The bridge plaque was filling up with names. The bridge's newsletter story for the next 5 months were written, and I was preparing to give one final update on September 26th to the church congregation. September 18th was the day of the Bridge of Hope donation car wash. Sunday's church bulletin had included the date and time of the car wash, as well as a request for washers. I had also sent an email to the church's men's ministry, reminding them of the need for volunteers and to tell their friends so there would be plenty of cars to wash. I chose to meet and set up for the car wash in Blythewood at 8 a.m., early enough to solicit vacationers departing from the two adjacent hotels. There was also a baseball tournament in Blythewood and a women's ministry event at my church that day, meaning more potential customers. My faith goal that Saturday was to raise $1,000, which would bring the bridge's fundraising total close to $20,000. I had it all planned out. I got an early start that morning by helping Cynthia get coolers filled with ice for the baseball tournament. I was running slightly behind schedule when my cell phone rang. It was Jessica. She wanted to know where I was, since I had told everyone to meet at 8 a.m. After my initial shock, I jokingly told her that I had announced that time so I would be there by 8:15 a.m., and I didn't expect anyone to actually be there at 8 a.m. I assured her that I was on my way with the buckets, soap, and hoses. Now, feeling a bit worried, I asked her how many others were there waiting on me. I was relieved, at least at that moment, when she replied, "No one." As I drove into the gas station's parking lot, I noticed a lot of cars had already parked in the spaces where I wanted to set up the car wash. Several of the cars apparently belonged to people who had carpooled to work that morning, since their owners were nowhere to be found. Regardless, I was a bit discouraged, since this meant we would now have to set up the car wash in the rear of the parking lot, which wouldn't be as visible to the passing public. My discouragement grew greater when, after Jessica and I had finished filling the 8 wash buckets with soap and water, and stretched out the 3 water hoses, no one else had shown up to help. It was 8:30 a.m. Then, I suddenly found myself saying a short, simple prayer. "Lord, we have provided the buckets of soap. Now I pray for you to provide the hands and the cars." Meanwhile, at the Blythewood baseball field, one friend had already asked Cynthia where I was, since I never missed any of my son's baseball games. Cynthia simply replied, "He's at the Nicaraguan Bridge Car Wash fundraiser." "Really?" said my friend. "I need to go and get my truck washed. I owe him." Cynthia immediately knew what she meant, but anyone else overhearing their conversation might not have fully understood the meaning in Jenny's response. For Jenny, it was a supportive way to pay back the generosity I had shown to her and her husband, Richard, in his hospital room in April. Just before noon, I saw Jenny and Richard's truck pulling into the car wash. They had also brought their son, my son, and another teammate. From the car wash, the three boys walked up to Blythewood Road, where I was holding a large sign with the words, "Bridge of Hope, Nicaraguan Mission Project, Donation Car Wash." For some reason, I seemed to be having a difficult time getting people to stop and get their car washed. Needing a break, and seeing the boys really wanted to be everyone's center of attention, I let them hold the sign. As I walked to find a spot in the shade, I noticed Mike, my church's mission team leader, walking over from the car wash. Mike was always cracking jokes, so I wasn't sure what he could possibly conjure up to say about the car wash. But today, for some reason, he had a more serious look on his face. Walking up, Mike looked me straight in the eyes and asked, "Thomas, have you heard what happened at the bridge site this week?" Pausing briefly, trying to read more into his question, I replied, "No, I haven't." He continued, "Do you remember the older man who took Avery's string across the river to mark the center line of the bridge?" I thought for a moment, but drew a blank stare. Seeing I couldn't remember, Mike explained, "He was the one who, as he got towards the middle of the river, slipped into a hole, and everyone laughed. His name was Orlando." The moment Mike said his name, I remembered the incident, because after he slipped, he struggled to regain his footing in the river. Then, after seeing he was safe, the people all laughed and hollered his name, "Orlando," at which time I immediately thought of Orlando, Florida. Mike, pausing briefly, stated, "Thomas, he drowned in the river this week." At that moment, I just stood there, looking at Mike with disbelief, frozen as his words sank into my heart. I slowly turned and stared over at the car wash, at the workers, and at the few cars that were being washed. I remembered thinking, "Oh God, why? Why did you allow this to happen on my watch? Why did you allow me to come this far only to fall short?" Never in my life had I given so much of not only my time, but my heart in supporting a mission project. As I continued staring at the car wash, I became angry, but not at God, at myself, because I felt like I hadn't done enough to raise the money for the bridge. To me, raising the money was now a personal vendetta, and I didn't care what I had to do or say to raise the rest. After a few minutes, I turned back to Mike and asked him what had happened. Mike explained, the rains had been heavy, and the people had not been able to cross the Bull Bull River for several days. Orlando had an old dugout canoe and needed to sell his corn, corn he could sell in the town of Mattiwas for money to buy food and supplies for his family. There were others who also needed to get to town, so he let them ride in the canoe with his corn. As Orlando struggled to maneuver the canoe filled with people and his corn in the high water of the greater Matagalpa River, it began to take on water. Everyone else left the canoe and made it safely to shore, but Orlando stayed in the canoe. He drowned trying to save not only his corn, but the canoe. I just stood there, speechless, absolutely speechless. We were so close to building him and his people a bridge. Mike broke into my thoughts by asking how much money we had raised to date. I told him we were at $18,500 and that our congregation and others had already given so much. As Mike was walking away, Jenny and Richard drove up in their freshly washed truck. They had come to get the boys and take them back to the baseball field for the next game. Richard looked to be doing well, considering the serious neck injury he had received, a result from the motorcycle accident in April. Though his neck still appeared to be a little stiff, at least he was walking. As I continued talking with them, I asked Jenny if she had gotten a bridge flyer. She said she had, but was going to wait and read it at home later that night. So I quickly shared with them a few of the project's details and thanked them for coming to support the fundraiser. That night, as I counted the donations from the car wash, it seemed like a good amount, but when added to the running total, only put us at $19,000. Then the thought raced through my mind, not as a prayer, but only as a thought. Lord, people have given so much, and we are so close to the goal, but I'm just not sure how much more people are going to be able to give. Sunday was the last day of the baseball tournament. Later at home that night, Cynthia told me I needed to call Jenny. Cynthia said Jenny had read the bridge flyer she had received from the car wash and wanted more information. Being the project coordinator, I was always eager to share more details concerning the need for the bridge. I was a little nervous calling Jenny, not exactly sure what questions she would have, so when she answered the phone, I let her do most of the talking. She told me, after reading the bridge flyer, she was really touched by the need for the bridge and had no idea people in developing countries often risked their lives to cross a river for their food and basic necessities. It also touched her that there were grown adults, not children, washing cars on a hot Saturday morning. This really impressed upon her heart how much this mission project must mean to our church. She went on to say she had shared the bridge flyer with her pastor at church that morning, and he asked her to get more information about the project. I told her that I appreciated her comments and was glad Richard had recovered so well from the motorcycle accident. I also thanked her for coming to the car wash to support the bridge project, even though I had told them they never had to repay me for what I gave them. She continued the conversation by telling me that Richard was so moved that someone from the baseball field would have taken their time to come to the hospital to see him. She said that I seemed to be doing well financially, and most people in that position stop associating with the lower class and only start thinking about themselves and their stuff. But I still seemed like an ordinary person who cared about people. Then, when she found out I was the project manager for the bridge project, she felt the Lord at the car wash saying, "Give back to Him." As I continued listening, Jenny told me something that at first I didn't understand. She said her church had met for the last time that morning, and a small group from their church was meeting on Wednesday night to divide up the building fund to support missionaries in Japan, research on breast cancer, food pantries, and other suggested charitable organizations. She felt led to present the bridge project to the group and asked for money to help with its fundraising. She asked me how much money we had raised and how much more we needed. My response to her was somewhat delayed because I was totally surprised and overjoyed that she would even consider doing that. I told her my church had raised $19,000, which included the $515 from Saturday's car wash. I told her about the Bridges to Prosperity organization and the requirement of having $25,000 up front to cover the cost for the bridge materials. My church needed to raise $6,000 more dollars by the end of the year so that construction could be started and the bridge completed before the rainy season began, which is normally during the month of May. I told her I had to give a bridge update to my church congregation next Sunday, and I wasn't sure what I was going to say except for them to give more money. I told her of my prayers for other churches to become involved in the bridge project and the fundraising. Then I told her about Orlando drowning last week in the river below where the bridge was planned to be built. I told her the whole story. Then, for a moment, we both cried together. I promised to email her pastor more information about the bridge, including the faith message and the previous bridge update I had given. Before hanging up, I told her that if her church even gave $1,000, that would put us at $20,000, and that maybe my church congregation would give a little more, seeing how close we were to reaching the $25,000 goal. After I hung up the phone, I told Cynthia what Jenny and I had talked about. Cynthia was just as surprised and wanted to know more about Jenny's church. I told her Jenny's church was part of the John Wesleyan Church Organization, and that several years ago, the church administrator had come down from Greenville to close all the smaller Wesleyan churches around Columbia and make those congregations join a big mega church the organization had built in Columbia. But Jenny and her church wanted to stay the small
lighthouse church in the community and wanted to build their own meeting place. After only 3 years, the membership had continually declined because members began to join other churches. Last Sunday, her pastor, seeing that the vision of building a meeting place of their own was seemingly out of reach, suggested to the remaining members that the church's building fund be divided up so missionaries and local charitable organizations could be helped now. That night, I thought back on my phone conversation with Jenny. Could this be God's answer to my prayer for another church to become involved in the project? I had searched out all the larger churches in the Columbia area, knowing they would have a large membership who could more easily support the fundraising efforts than a smaller church congregation. But now, surprisingly, here was a friend who was willing to ask her church to support the bridge project, a church that was basically closing its doors because of its declining membership. Then I began to ponder how much they would give, if anything at all. After all, these people had never heard of this project and were not even part of the same church denomination as my church. Would they support a Baptist church's mission project? All I could do was pray that they would.